Dr. Wayne. He's going to talk a little bit about the benefits of Len to those who are non-clinicians as well. Dr. Wayne is a professor of health policy and management, and he's been a member of the faculty at Arkansas since 1988. He teaches in the area of healthcare finance, health information system, health economics, and management and leadership skills. And his current research areas are effectiveness of public health systems. That's an easy area to emphasize. Improving public health infrastructure, another easy one. Disaster preparedness, evaluation of health services delivery, rural health, and the prevention of unhealthy behaviors. Dr. Wayne.
Thank you. And let me see if I can lower the screen a little bit, so unlike Mr. Wilson on Tim the Toolman Taylor, all you can see are my eyes. But I've been asked to talk about the contribution of the multidisciplinary men training to non-clinical professionals, and I wasn't sure whether Katie was going to separate medical versus the other clinical, so some of my slides are very similar to hers, but I also think that the things that I'm going to emphasize are very different from what Katie was mentioning. But let me just say, over the years, I have seen a number of men trainees in health administration and in other areas, and some of the benefits that I've seen obviously are increased knowledge, but more than that, increased professional development. Not necessarily in some of the language or verbiage that we see about the LEN programs, but the trainees definitely learn to think outside of their profession, but the multidisciplinary approach improves their effectiveness within their profession and their professional development. Certainly, as Katie said, increased multidisciplinary collaboration. Slightly different, increased or improved cultural awareness. And then what I am going to say a number of times during the next 5 to 10 minutes is increased or enhanced leadership and critical thinking skills. And then anecdotally, but too often to be just a coincidence, I have seen the LEN trainees benefit in some very subtle ways in their careers. And in many instances, the LEN trainees, when other folks are finding it hard to get one job offer, always have a job offer. But typically what we see in health administration is that everybody will get a job offer, but the LEN trainee will get two or three offers and is picking the best one. And then finally, I've really seen the benefit in terms of the career development and the really speed at which advancement occurs. And I don't know that there's any, I don't know what the causality is, but it happens too frequently to be spurious. And so what I would say is, and what I say to my trainees, that that there are real benefits to the LEN that are hard to quantify, but that you will reap the benefits over your career, and that is definitely true. Okay, as Laura said, I have no financial relationships to disclose. That's the mandatory MBHA slide. This slide just talks about the fact that the interdisciplinary training programs in the UAMS land are designed to provide trainees with the knowledge and skills to assume leadership roles in the healthcare of children with neurodevelopmental and related disabilities and their families. In preparation for these leadership roles, they are structured around a core curriculum with four broadly intertwined areas. First of all, the guiding principles and values, and obviously these come from the Maternal Child Health Bureau. Certainly, we have training around interdisciplinary practice. We have benefits that accrue from system development and obviously research. And each of these areas, competencies are specified that are achieved by the trainees within the context of things that Katie's already mentioned, didactic training, clinical and research activities, and the leadership project that the students do. And in order to provide effective leadership in health systems over the next several decades and well into the future, these are critical areas that have to be mastered by all of the professions. Okay, I'm going to just kind of walk through this, and you can see the parallel between some of what I'm going to say and what Katie just said. All of the trainees get some didactic education, and the titles you see on the slide, and I'm not going to go through each one, but clearly all trainees need an introduction into neurodevelopment, developmental disabilities. Some of the major didactic sessions that we've had include autism and genetics associated with neurodevelopment disabilities and autism, the diagnostic evaluation for the autism spectrum disorders, cultural diversity, and this, the actual title was Cultural Diversity, Trying to Understand the Emerging Melting Pot. And others that you can see on the slide here. And what happens is, certainly the trainees learn to provide, and we're turning out a number of young professionals who now have the ability to provide care to children with neurological development disorders and help the family in ways that are comprehensive and critical. Further, the trainees understand the roles of the other professions and the interactions necessary to improve the family and the child's outcomes. Finally, their training prepares them to recognize the family environment, and more importantly in my area, the system characteristics that impact outcomes. And I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but when a family is setting up their retirement planning and their estate planning activities, there are real challenges and specific ways that this has to be done to protect the child after the parents are deceased. And that's a systems thing. And certainly I'm going to say this in a minute about advocacy, but certainly we are in the process in Arkansas of getting ABM to be included as mandatory. If you're going to write insurance policies in Arkansas, you have to include some of the therapies that really can impact and the outcomes of children with learning disabilities. So, as Katie mentioned, we have a lot of disciplines, and certainly she mentioned in terms of medical, the developmental pediatrics, but the dentistry is also very important, and I added that to this slide. In addition, Katie mentioned that we have special education and health services administration, and then the other usual suspects. Oh, I also added the family advocacy here, because certainly we are training the leaders within the professions, and the professions drive advocacy at the grassroots level, and having a coordinated effort to improve systems that are dedicated to improving the outcomes of families impacted by neurological development disorders is very, very important. And so I would just stop there. Katie talked about solution-focused learning. And it is a student-centered educational method in which trainees become responsible for their own learning. And Katie's already described the process, but in the interview with the family, we write down the facts, and I think two things are happening. From the non-clinician side, many of the facts are clinical, and that's important to understand the context of the diagnosis for the child and the family. But then many of the issues deal with access to care, reaching the family max. A thing that is, in my opinion, relatively well understood in my profession, but a clinician writes suspected autism in the medical record, and that's there forever, even if it's, even if another, even if a developmental pediatrician says, no, it is not autism, it is, and Gabe, you can fill in the blank there, I'm not sure what that trainee's diagnosis was, but let me just say that if the clinician has signed off on it, you all probably know, it's in the medical record forever. All we can do is put a correcting entry in, but it's very frustrating to families to see something that they, it's in the medical record that they do not believe is correct and have no idea how to change those kinds of things. What I think, it's certainly the tutors guide and stimulate the discussion, but the trainees go out and investigate the topics that they choose. And two things are happening here from my perspective. One, they're learning the value of independent research. But two, when they come back and present their findings in the small group sessions, they find out the value of reliable versus unreliable sources. And that's a very important thing to learn that is hard to teach in a didactic sense, but when someone else in the group says, that's not true, and then presents the evidence, and where did you get that information? And so the trainees are clearly learning about the value of reliable sources. And it's really easy to say if it says .gov behind it, I'm looking for Laura when I say that, that it's probably reliable. But there are a number of very reliable websites, but there are also a number of websites that are propaganda. The other thing that I see is learning from each other. And a physical therapist or a health administration student will have investigated a topic, but not understand it. And I love having the clinical fellows, the pediatricians in the small groups, because referring back to Kim for those who are at the podium, she would say, well, that is because of this, this, and this. And it's training that we don't get, and it's frankly a nuance that we wouldn't have known where to find even if we had heard the terms before. So, really and truthfully, the cross-learning across the disciplines is very, very important. And then, finally, on this slide, you can see the trainees have the opportunity to discuss and comment on the ideas and opinions of others. They can ponder unclear issues, offer differing points of view, and then something that I find also a learning experience. I learn from the faculty as much as I learn from the students, because the students can pick the brains of the faculty, and as a group, we work out solutions to very complex problems. Now, every student does a leadership project, and every student does a research project. And I put a laundry list of some of the research project or the leadership projects that the students developed last year. And let me say that they can present these projects either oral in an oral session or in a poster session. And so rather than bore you with titles, I thought I'd show you some pictures of people. And this is Brooke and Kendall worked together and made an oral presentation about a project entitled Closing the Gap Between Attachment Parents and Medical Professionals. And here, for those of you who know some of these people, we have two of the faculty, Margaret McGee and Eldon Schultz, but standing to the left of the picture is Matthew Reel, and his project produced a newsletter for the Arkansas Homeless Coalition, a leadership project. In this particular one, Catherine Carpenter is presented a made a poster presentation, and she developed the state planning seminars for children for families who have children with special needs. And I'm not going to show you picture after picture, but I did 4 leadership projects and 4 research projects. This was Christina, Lindsay, and Ashley, and they developed a program to increase awareness of bike safety and the importance of wearing bicycle helmets. So our LEND trainees are out there working on a variety of projects that provide useful information and hopefully prevent some of the neurological development disorders and for future generations. They also do a research project, and this is a little different. The students are often very creative, in my opinion, and not often, they're always very creative in their leadership projects, but the research projects, oftentimes they're paired with a mentor who already has ongoing research. So they might be involved in data collection, data entry, cleaning, data analysis, project management, helping to write reports, preparing poster presentations or actually writing the article for publication. And again, on this sort of cover slide, I've shown some of the titles that were done in this past year. And I've tried to pick different people here, but this slide shows Stephanie in front of her research project, and it was looking at the impact of noise on reaction time using, and I accept that she explained it all to me, using PBT is the simple way of saying that. And here's one of our, she was a first year fellow last year, developmental pediatrician, but Kim McFerrin's research project determined the validity and diagnostic utility of clinical impressions generated from a clinical interview of patients and informal observations of the child in the clinical setting and the diagnosis of ADHD. And Brooke here, her project was determining the preferences, similarities, and differences in assistive devices. And here you see David Deere and Diana Verity talking to Carly. She was a health administration trainee, and she looked at some of the hospital discharge data and prevalence in Arkansas and some other types of diagnoses involved. And you can see their graphs and conclusions and those kinds of things. Okay, clinic participation, and I listed a few more clinics than Katie did. Certainly the ADHD clinic, the Autism Resource and Outreach Center. I included the Fiesta Health Fair down in Dumas. I'm looking at David when I say that. The TBI follow-along project, the sickle cell support groups. And each trainee has to participate in 3 of these clinical settings or clinics each semester. And what I find is it's a great extension of the sort of didactic training that we get. And David, I'm looking at you, and I know that the family for the didn't show up a couple of months ago, but you still took the time to explain the disorder, and the clinicians there explained how the assessments would be done, and which measures would be looked at, and just seeing that happen in the real world is excellent, excellent preparation. Okay, so I have a slide here that I didn't expect to see in front of me, but let me just say the interdisciplinary training program, LEND program at UAMS is designed to provide students with experiences that enable them to become effective leaders and practitioners in their own disciplines. They're getting master's or doctorate degrees. And many times I see that the students don't fully appreciate the fact that in many or most of our communities, anybody with a master's degree is going to be a leader in that community, whether they want to be or not. And what the LEND program is doing is training them to be effective leaders and practitioners within their discipline, but also to apply the knowledge, skills that they learn to support persons with developmental disabilities and their families, and to effectively participate in an interdisciplinary process of designing, evaluating, and implementing programs to effectively work in an interdisciplinary setting. So, the benefits, trainees obtain experiences that enhance their leadership potential for organizational development and professional development. They receive competency-building experiences that strengthen their ability to provide services in a wide array of settings and across a wide number of age bands. Trainees receive knowledge and skills that increase their marketability as a human service professional. They are prepared to effectively serve persons with developmental disabilities regardless of their career, and the trainees expand their skills for an understanding of the ability to perform valid clinical research. So, in my opinion, LIND enhances interdisciplinary system-wide solutions. I almost put the CDC's famous, what I call A chart, that lists the entire healthcare system and has things like the faith-based community and fire and police and a number of other elements. LIND really impacts all of those. We're really training people to provide system-wide solutions, facilitate the provision of culturally sensitive services, and certainly it helps the trainees develop skills in planning, implementing interventions in family, organizational, and community settings. And that's what I wanted to say, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'd like to direct this question to both the two presenters who have already presented. Concretely, how has the LIND experience influenced what you do? How has it influenced what you do clinically? How has it influenced what you mentor trainees? You can answer as tersely or as robustly as you want. Just get really concrete. What has it meant to you? How has it shaped what you do?
Well, certainly it's given me a lot more people that if a patient comes in with some bizarre question or therapy that I've never heard of, I can just call up and say, what do you think of this? Which is a lot easier than trying to figure out in PubMed, if it's something, especially because a lot of the subdisciplines are not necessarily in the literature that's easily accessible to me. And so that's definitely helped, as well as watching occupational physical therapists, sometimes they'll do some assessments during our SFL with the family. Watching how they do it and picking up some cues has helped me be a better critical reader of their reports. Because there are things that on a test a child may or may not pass because it's not like in midline or something, which may or may not actually impact how the child functions. But picking up those little pieces of data are very useful in interpreting clinical reports. And it's helped me figure out how to read between the lines on some of the referrals and some of the reports. And that's very practical. I know that's still pretty broad, but it's very useful clinically to better assess the child.
Okay, and I'm going to speak directly to health administration because those are the students I see every day. And clearly, administrators are trained to look at numbers and outcomes and quality measures, and they oftentimes don't appreciate the nuances or the complexities of actual medical care. And on top of that, they learn about the sort of organization structures of the nursing structure, the chief of the medical staff, the other organization structures, but they really don't interact, at least in their training, with a lot of physical therapists or a lot of nurses or OTs, PTs. Certainly they don't see audiologists and speech pathologists. So that this experience really does make them better administrators because they understand how all of the pieces fit together to help a child with a developmental, neurodevelopmental disability. And, I mean, I hear administrators say, and sometimes I hear clinicians say, you know, I was managing the patient really well until the family came in. But understanding the family's context, or the patient's context within the family environment, really does make an administrator a much more effective individual. The other things that I would, and I see your hand, but one more comment. Clearly what I think we do, or where we can help, is clinicians learn about advocacy, strategic planning, and frankly the way administrators are going to be looking at them when they're in their careers, so that they can better, as Katie said, she understands and picks up cues on what to look for when you're doing a medical evaluation. The professions are looking at the administrators and saying, well, darn, I didn't know they were looking at that measure. Or, you know, and we're doing quality measures on all kinds of care. And a lot of times the docs or the clinicians don't even know that's happening. And all of a sudden, we're all coming together and we're trying to provide quality medicine, quality, cost-effective medicine. And Lent really helps in that.
One of the other side note, we actually, for SFL, there are families, we have one upcoming this year, that we use SFL therapeutically when it's like, we think this family just needs to be heard by a lot of people, by whatever they want to say. And that gives us a forum in a non-medical setting where they can be heard and have a voice and have their concerns acknowledged.
I was just going to say, I'm a 1985 graduate.
Wow.